Hello again, Memphis, and welcome to Storyboard 30. This is the show taken right out of the pages of Storyboard Memphis, the nonprofit publication that brings you the arts, community, and culture in one place. And I am Mark Fleischer, publisher of Storyboard Memphis and your host for Storyboard 30. My guest today is Bill Carey. Bill is well known throughout both the historical and educational community here in Tennessee, and is the founder and executive director of the nonprofit organization called Tennessee History for Kids. Tennessee History for Kids was organized in November 2004. It provides students and teachers with a resource for Tennessee history at a time when most public school students in Tennessee have no Tennessee history or civics textbooks. Bill has an exciting in-person event coming up here in Memphis on July 27th at the Cott Museum, which we will talk about during the show. So, Bill Carey, welcome to Storyboard 30.
Thank you.
Bill, so in my introduction, I mentioned, of course, the fact that you are executive director of Tennessee History for Kids, a nonprofit since 2004, and you have a few events coming up here in July. Two of them happen to be in West Tennessee, one in Union City and one here coming up in Memphis, July 27th. Why don't we start there and talk about the framework of the July 27th event, and then in general, these events annually?
Well, first of all, we are very excited to be having in-person events again. Back in March when we scheduled these, a lot of the venues said we can't have these because of COVID, and I had to talk several of them into opening their doors for us. But we're very excited. Teachers are going to be thrilled to finally get back together again. Late July and early August is a time of year for in-services when teachers go back to school. We're having six events statewide, but two are in West Tennessee, and each of them has kind of a theme. The one in Memphis on the 27th kind of delves into the civil rights movement and to a lesser degree, the cotton industry in Memphis. Kind of got a West Tennessee flavor, but we've got a ridiculous lineup of presenters, probably the best lineup of presenters we've ever had in service. I guess you'd like me to tell you what they are.
Well, yeah, you know, so there's a couple things there. So I'll give you a chance to share the lineup of presenters. But I was, you know, reviewing the topics, and I'll tell you what, in terms of history being relevant to our discussions today, I'm looking at these topics and I can't think of historical topics that are more relevant to our current conversations than these. So tell us about the lineup, first of all.
Well, there's a man named Mark Parasquia, who was a longtime Memphis Commercial Appeal reporter, and he will be presenting on a subject he's researched at great length. He's going to be presenting on Martin Luther King's last 32 hours alive on the planet and exactly what was happening. And this is something he researched at great length a few years ago for what became a book about photographer Ernest Withers and about the FBI.
Right.
So that's an incredible presentation, and I personally can't wait to see that one. There is Daphne McFerrin. Is probably going to be our presenter on a subject known as the Tent City Movement of Fayette County, which is a major civil rights movement, which is required to be taught in the social studies standards. A lot of people don't know about the Tent City Movement, but it's a big deal, and it's something that comes up twice in the Tennessee social studies standards, and rightfully so. Mm-hmm. Well, they've done wonders at the University of Memphis about researching and first-person accounts from that. Then there's John Ashworth, who is president of the Lynching Sites Project of Memphis. He's going to be presenting on the history of lynching in Tennessee and its effect on our culture. Difficult subject. There's a lot more detail than people realize, and a lot of it has come out. A lot of this is something we've been reminded of recently. A lot of old newspapers that are now being digitized, we're finding out more and more about these events.
Mm-hmm.
And John's a lifelong resident, I think, of Haywood County, and he's going to be great. Somebody named Willie Bearden, you may know Willie.
That's right.
We'll be talking about the cotton industry and its effect on the culture of Memphis. Not just, of course, we'll be in the Cotton Museum at the Memphis Cotton Exchange, so the whole place breathes cotton.
Yep.
But there's fascinating implications of the cotton industry and its connection to like the music industry and its connection to Liverpool, England, and just all sorts of things.
That's interesting. Liverpool in England. I'm going to have to.
Ask Willie about this.
No kidding.
Ask Willie what George Harrison said about music coming from Memphis and those cotton and those big cotton shipments. And assuming we don't lose time at the day, I'm going to make a presentation on a subject you researched at great length a few years ago. I researched the history of slavery in Tennessee, and one of the areas that I learned a lot about is the slave trade. And people, obviously, there's one name in particular that people associate with the slave trade in Memphis. But in order to really understand the slave trade, you have to dig deep. And I did dig deep. I looked at every newspaper printed in Tennessee from 1791 until 1865 and learned all sorts of stuff about the slave trade, some of which has been completely forgotten over the years. You know, what is a coffle? What, people don't even know what that word means.
Yeah.
What did the slave trade have to do with banks? What did the slave trade have to do with Chancery Court clerk and masters? It's very intricate and very complicated. And it's kind of disturbing, but in order to really understand it, you have to learn about it. And those are our presentations. And like I said, it's a lineup like none we've ever had before. And it's an all-day event at the Cotton Museum at the Memphis Cotton Exchange.
So this is again a Tuesday event, July 27th at the Cotton Museum. Roughly, how long would you say each of these presentations are?
Right now, the schedule I've got working on has us all presenting about an hour and 15 minutes.
Uh-huh.
I should mention that the event is limited to about 45 people that sign up. There's only so many we can take in that little space. Its main intended audience are public school teachers. But as it turns out, we may have scheduled it too close to the school year. And so just to make sure we have a full house, I've opened it up to everyone else. So if you're a history buff or a homeschool parent or just somebody who finds this interesting, we do charge $40, which pays for everything, including lunch and whatever speaker fees we have.
Mm-hmm.
And when you compare it to, you know, teachers often have to pay $100 for day-long in-service or something. So we're certainly doing this on the cheap, but it will be something. It goes from 9 to 4 p.m.
Yeah, and when we first talked about this, I guess about a month or more ago, you know, you definitely mentioned the framework of it, which is typically, like you said, geared toward teachers. However... you look at the lineup, you look at the relevancy of the topics to today's discussions, and my reaction to this is everyone should come see this. Hour and 15 minutes, you have enough time to take really deep dives into each of these topics. So yeah, go ahead.
I was going to say, I've been writing a history column for Tennessee Magazine for 17 years. I've been doing Tennessee history for kids all this time. There are some subjects that I do think I know a huge amount about, and I'm probably close to an expert on. But for example, I have never researched or heard a presentation at great length on King's assassination. I just haven't. But most teachers haven't either. And I can't wait to find out some of the things that he has discovered. And John's presentation is another one. Again, I'm quite aware that we had lynchings all over the state. I'm familiar with some of the names. But, you know, it's important to remember, by the way, lynching wasn't just an African-American thing. In certain parts of the state, lynchings took place against people for other reasons.
Mm-hmm.
So John has researched this in different parts of the state. So the impact of lynchings on our culture, for example, and until the 1930s, there was an assumption that this type of thing could happen again at any time. Until about the mid 1930s, and that's when things began to change. So very interesting.
Yeah, very interesting. You know, looking at these topics, you know, one of the obvious questions that pops up is is how this relates to some of our recent discussions and the controversy around, you know, critical race theory, right? And you and I have talked about this, but in terms of the framework of these presentations, you know, this gets into a little bit of that territory, but there's also a lot of confusion around, you know, this thing called critical race theory and what it is and what it is not. So let's talk about that for a second. What is it, quote unquote, and what is it not?
Well, I do invite everyone, first of all, to read the new law. I don't remember the number of it off the top of my head, but I have printed it out and read it several times, and I've talked actually to the person who wrote it on behalf of the state legislator. And if you read it and then read what it bans and what it doesn't ban, it makes it very clear that the law will not ban teachers from teaching anything important topics about the civil rights movement, slavery, et cetera, things that come up in the social studies standards. I'm not 100% sure that the law as currently written does much of anything, except it certainly has drawn a lot of attention.
Right. It's
drawn a lot of attention since it passed. It drew practically no attention before it did, and that, to me, that's very disturbing, because I'm a former member of the Capitol Hill Press Corps. It bothers me that they don't tell us about bills until they pass. But there were certainly a lot of curriculum bills this year, and about two of the seven passed, and we only heard about the ones that did. But the bottom line is, public school teachers still have to teach these topics just as much as they did a few months ago. And if, unfortunately, all the publicity about the new law may have the horrible effect of giving parents the impression that if their children ever come home from public school feeling a little challenged by what they learned in history class that day, that they have grounds for a lawsuit. And that's kind of what I'm hearing from talk radio and this, that, and the other. And that's absolutely not true, but that won't stop people from complaining on Facebook or social media or talk radio or making stuff up. And so there's nothing we can do about that, I'm afraid.
Yeah.
But the fact that we're having this event proves that teachers, that the critical race theory bill doesn't do what a lot of people seem to think it does.
Well, the other controversy around it is the fact that whatever the critical race theory is, it wasn't even being taught.
No.
Yeah.
We don't have a high school level class on different political theories. Maybe we should. I know that when I was growing up in North Alabama, I took a class where we learned about Marxism and Leninism and capitalism and this, that, and the other, and all the different theories. We don't do that now. But you know, I do remember learning all about communism.
Right.
It didn't stop me from flying in the Navy and going to college and all the other things I've done. So I wouldn't have voted for the bill. I don't like them banning ideas from the curriculum, but I didn't have a vote.
Yeah. Coming back to the topics that you have lined up here and the speakers you have lined up, one of them that really stands out to me is this the tent city movement. Because here we are at a time and place in this country where, you know, there are some state legislatures that are passing various bills that are limiting, you know, arguably limiting voting rights. And yet the tent city movement, I'm reading directly from the description in your flyer, one of the longest sustained events in the civil rights movement was a nationally publicized event under which thousands of African-American residents of Fayette County were evicted for trying to vote. Evicted for trying to vote. The tent city movement was one of the key chapters that proved that the 1965 Voting Rights Act was needed. Again, it couldn't be more relevant to our current discussions.
Yeah, and it's a fascinating story how it happened, and Daphne is the expert, and there are other experts at University of Memphis. But strangely enough, it all started with a murder trial. A man who was going to be tried for a black man who was accused of murdering a white deputy in Fayette County, and and he claimed it was self-defense, and he had left the state for 18 years or something, and was brought back into Tennessee, was going to be tried for murder. And they kept coming up with juries that were all white. And at the time they were going to try this man for murder, World War II had happened, and the world was a different place, and it got national publicity that they kept coming up with all-white juries. And then it came to light that the reason they kept coming up with all-white juries is in a predominantly black county of the South, there were practically no African Americans registered to vote.
Mm-hmm.
And so the way the whole thing started is fascinating, but it did get a lot of publicity. It was in the top of the front page of the New York Times for months and months. And it's funny that we don't know about it, but it was very early in the civil rights movement. It was like in the late 50s.
Right.
And the amazing thing to me is that even though it's been in the social studies standards for 8 years now, I still don't think necessarily that teachers know what it is. And especially teachers necessarily in Southwest Tennessee, where it happened.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, so I'm not the expert on it, and others are. But by the way, one of the leaders in the movement, Daphne's father, he died just a few months ago. And he would still go out to his store in Somerville, McFerrin's Grocery. And I once stopped by to see him, and he wasn't sure what to make of me, but eventually we became friends. And but I wonder how many people does everyone in Fayette County recognize that name? And I know that they don't, because I was in Fayette County about a year and a half ago, and everyone I met, I asked them, do you know who John McFerrin is? And no one had ever heard of him.
Mm-hmm.
At least none of the people that I met.
Yeah. You know, looking at these topics, and again, I'm kind of echoing what you were saying about, you know, what's on talk radio and what you hear in certain media circles, that some of these topics, lynching, you know, voter suppression for African Americans, you know, slavery, and so on, that, you know, there's, you know, what would you say to the people who say this is divisive? And it's designed to tell white Americans to be shameful of our history. What's your response to that kind of reaction that is out there?
Well, first of all, Tennessee History for Kids does a lot. I invite everyone to go to our website. We're having 6 events over the course of 2 weeks in July. One of them is about the Manhattan Project in East Tennessee. One's about the Civil War and Chattanooga. One's about Andrew Jackson and the Hermitage. One is about when Tennessee became a state. So they're all about different topics.
Right.
And so we don't just focus on this, but we don't shy away from it either. I do think a lot of students today are turned off to history. One of the reasons they're turned off to history is if they're told an antiseptic version of it, they recognize that it's an antiseptic version of it. And they say they're more cynical, more mature when it comes to some things that we realize.
Right.
And so, but if we admit shortcomings, and also, let me tell you something. Slavery was not just something that some Americans had to deal with. Everyone who lived in the South had to deal with slavery, rightfully or wrongfully. It wasn't just if as far as white Southerners are concerned, even if you didn't own slaves, you were absolutely affected by slavery every day. It kept taxes low because we used slave labor to do certain things. It kept wages low because you always knew that factories could replace free workers with enslaved workers at any time. So you kind of have to understand all this because, you know, that is, so the taxes in the South have always been lower than other parts of the country. But if you look back in the 1830s, one of the ways Nashville was able to keep taxes low is that when they rebuilt their water plant, they purchased 26 slaves.
Mm-hmm.
And other than hiring. So it's hugely important to understand that. It's not just something that that took place in rural parts of the state, and it affected everything. And so you really can't understand. You also certainly can't understand why we had a civil war.
Right.
Unless you understand just how ingrained slavery was. It wasn't just 25% of the population that owned slaves. So if you don't delve into all these topics, you really can't understand history very well. And one other thing I'll mention Our products are geared to students of all grades, and there are some topics we talk about for 11th graders and 8th graders, but we don't talk about for 2nd and 3rd graders. Mm-hmm. We do understand that we don't have a slavery presentation for 2nd graders. But for example, let me switch gears for a second. The Scopes trial.
Right.
The Scopes trial is something that comes up in later Tennessee grades, but it doesn't come up in the 3rd grade because 3rd graders aren't quite ready to learn about what evolution is anyway. Okay, and that's true with a lot of topics. So most of these difficult topics in this kind of detail don't come up until later. Okay, so to a certain degree, the people who are upset because they're, you know, if there's a person upset because their second grader read a story about the lynching of someone, well, maybe they have a point, but maybe we shouldn't talk about it in the second grade. But I do think we should mention this somewhere in high school. So
yeah, I find it very interesting what you said about students of history who recognize a sanitized version. You know, all these kids have to do is look on social media, look to see what's happening in the news, and realize that I'm going to put history around quotes. Is history still alive? But everything that we've been dealing with as a country since the founding of this country is still alive and well, you know,
or alive and challenging, yeah. I should say. Yeah.
One other thing, switching gears a little bit, there are people who think that the war crimes that happened, that the atrocities that happened in the Vietnam War were somehow new. We now know, if you look at the first person accounts and read them carefully, beyond a shadow of a doubt, there were war crimes in the American Revolution on both mm-hmm. sides. Mm-hmm. And all you've got to do is go to the Battle of Kings Mountain Visitor Center, buy a copy of first person accounts and read it in careful detail.
Mm-hmm.
So in that regard, you know, kind of nothing is new under the sun. One of the reasons Andrew Jackson hated the British so much, because he and his mother were there at a battle after when he was 13 years old. He and his mother went to a place in the Waxhaws in South Carolina, and they saw what was left of some rebels who had fought the British, and many of them had tried to surrender to the British, and they were bayoneted where they tried to surrender. Okay, and so do we talk about war crimes in the American Revolution? I think we should mention it, but that gives you some idea. That's always happened in war, and when you talk about Fort Pillow, you know, and what happened at Fort Pillow, was there a war crime? There could very well have been. So it certainly wasn't the only one in the Civil War. So I do think the more people learn, maybe the more they'll understand and the more they'll accept it.
Yeah.
I mean, I know a lot of this stuff, and I'm certainly a proud American. So it doesn't stop me from, you know, standing during the Pledge of Allegiance or anything.
Well, see, that's the argument that I would have is that, you know, when you look at world history and you look at the atrocities against the human race in the history of the world, and then you look at the United States, we're not immune to it. In other words, however, this is still a country at least some semblance of a democracy. We still enjoy freedoms that many countries do not and never have. There's still so much to be proud of.
Learning about our history does not
take away any of that. Yeah.
Here's one thing that when I always point out to people, if you want to know the difference between the United States and other countries in the world, look at how German prisoners of war were treated in Tennessee. There were about 5 or 6 prisoners of war camp in Tennessee. And thousands of Germans were housed in Tennessee in 1943 and 44. And compare how they were treated to how Americans who were held prisoner in Germany were treated. And it's unbelievable the difference. I've interviewed a man who may still be alive, but he fought under Rommel and he was a prisoner of war in Crossville. And the Germans were treated very, very well. And he will be the first to tell you they gained weight. They were fed so well on the Cumberland Plateau as prisoners of war.
Wow!
But Americans who were captured and sent to Germany, the Germans tried to separate the Jews to send them to special death camps, and so it's so. If, and this is again a topic, and we'll be talking about this topic at one of the events we're having in July, the one we're having at Oak Ridge. So, I have plenty of stories both directions to tell.
So with the little bit of time we have left, again, it's the event itself is Tuesday, July 27th. It's at the Cotton Exchange. It's hugely important to our current conversation. Preceding that, July 23rd in Union City, you have an event as well. One of the topics there is about the history of the Mississippi River, which includes a discussion about the Sultana disaster, right?
Well, unfortunately, I'm not the presenter on this one. It's a Memphis attorney named Jerry Potter who has devoted a large part of his life to researching the Sultana, which exploded on the Mississippi River in April of 1865, killing more Americans than the Titanic would kill 50 years later. It's one of the most overlooked events in American history because it happened the week Lincoln was assassinated. And Jerry has written a book on the subject, and he will be presenting, but it's a fascinating topic. And some of the people who were killed in the Sultana, these were all Union prisoners of war being taken back home and never made it. Some of them are buried in unmarked graves at the Memphis National Cemetery. But it's fascinating stuff. We also have presentations on the history of the river. We're doing one on Fort Pillow. And it's not just in Union City. It's at a place called Discovery Park of America, which is, if you've never been to Discovery Park of America, it's one of the most remarkable educational children's museums in the United States.
Yeah.
And it's kind of in a very rural area. So we're just delighted to have it there. At all these events, obviously, we will be touring the facility. We have a lot to see at Discovery Park, and they're always wonderful when we have events there.
Yeah. Bill Carey, final thought. Why is history so darn important to us?
I didn't expect that final thought. I will say that it keeps me going every morning. I never stop running out of things to research. But I will say this. I think in the year 2021, it's more fun to research history than ever before because so much stuff is now coming to light because of the digitization of newspapers. Just 25 years ago, you had to go to the state library, check out a roll of Memphis commercial appeals from the 1840s, and look at it hand by hand and kind of slowly go through it. And you could spend years, and now you can do searches. And it's not only made history kind of made us be aware, but it's also, of course, helped the researching of your family tree. And so many things are now coming to light that are just... that people didn't know it, you know. And so I think that's part of it. Mm-hmm. But unfortunately, some people are afraid of it. Some people are like, well, let's not bring that up. It's just divisive. Well, how? I mean, I'm obviously at the other point of view on that regard.
Yeah, and also, you know, I feel like history is closer than you think, you know. In other words,
oh yeah, let me tell you a quick story about that. On the lynching front, a few years ago, I got a phone call from a woman in Connecticut who had found my website, and she asked me to research a story in her family about a member of her family who was lynched in Crockett County. And I told her I would research it, but she didn't know a lot about it. And I started looking into it, went down to Crockett County, started digging around. And not only did I find all the facts about it, I even found photographs of it. And I was then able to connect her with all these facts. And then about 2 years later, it turns out that somebody was creating a museum in Montgomery, Alabama, the lynching museum, and they had a big ceremony. And I was one of the speakers at that event at the Crockett County Courthouse. But it was weird to see her. Consists of something, and there were people at the event who were children when it happened. And wow. To see her and everybody talking, that was really something. But yeah, it's not that. It's not necessarily, even though this happened in 1933, I think it was, there are still people who remember this thing, and there's still stories about it and stupid ghost stories about it and this, that, and the other. So yeah, we're never too far from this stuff.
Exactly. Yeah. Well, Bill Carey, again, the event is coming up. It's July 27th. It's a Tuesday. It's at the Cotton Exchange.
And in order to register, you have to go to the website, Tennessee History for Kids, which is www.tnhistoryforkids.org. There's a button in the middle that talks about them.
Very good. Bill Carey, thank you so much for joining us here at Storyboard 30.
Thank you.
We've been talking to Bill Carey, Executive Director of Tennessee History for Kids. Thank you once again, Bill. Look for those July 23rd and July 27th events coming up, and go to tnhistoryforkids.org. That is tnhistoryforkids.org. And if you're listening to our podcast, check out the information and link right here on storyboardmemphis.org. You have been listening to Storyboard 30 on 89.3 WYPL and on podcast at storyboardmemphis.org. And this has been your host, Mark Fleischer. Thanks, as always, to WYPL and the Memphis Public Libraries for their support, to producers Vance Durbin and Stephen Ussery, and to longtime WYPL broadcast manager Tommy Warren, and, of course, to you listeners and supporters of the library and FM 89.3. We hope you join us next time on Storyboard 30 for more conversation with those Memphis personalities and shapers who make our lives here in the Bluff City just a little bit better. Memphis, make it a great week, and stay safe out there.